Chapter 9. Fulfilling a Promise. The late afternoon sun cast an orange glow across the fire station, painting long shadows on the pristine kept vehicle bay. Violet, although a seasoned paramedic and accustomed to handling seriously injured people, the extreme carnage from the night before lingered heavy within her heart. Especially, the unusual promise she had made to one of the victims. News of the horrific terrorist attack had dominated the airwaves all day, and Violet deliberately steered clear of any newscasts, seeking refuge in the quiet routines of the station. Yet, a nagging curiosity gnawed at her. Stepping into the deserted lunchroom, she flicked on the television, the sudden burst of light illuminating the room. The set was tuned to a local news channel, with the volume muted. With a click, she cranked it up, but was ready to quickly turn it off, if more unsettling bad news presented itself. It wasn't long before a news report seized her attention. The footage depicted a reporter standing resolute alongside the imposing southern border wall, its stark silhouette ending abruptly. Clearly, there was a substantial gap in the wall at this location. Behind him, a large crowd of hundreds of people milled about, with exhaustion and expectation on their faces. The reporter stated, "I'm here at Eagle Pass, and behind me is just today's batch of illegal aliens. Most of them, crossing the border here throughout the night, then surrendering themselves to the watchful eyes of Border Patrol agents." The reporter's voice was laced with a touch of exasperation. As he explained, "Over the past few years alone," he declared, "Border Patrol has documented a staggering record influx of at least 12 million apprehensions of illegal border crossers, and that's just the tip of the iceberg." He elaborated on the federal government's catch-and-release policy, a system that was no secret to Texans like Violet, who had borne the brunt of this so-called invasion for years. He continued, saying, "Once taken into custody, these individuals are swiftly processed, often within a day, and then released into the United States." The reporter went on to explain the effects of current immigration policies. "Thanks to the federal government, illegal border crossers receive taxpayer-funded air travel across the nation, free government housing, free medical care, and monthly welfare checks. Essentially, illegal immigration is a federally subsidized system, facilitating and incentivizing an invasion into and across America." The reporter added, "They can choose their destination at an airport, then board a plane with no identification, all courtesy of the federal government. Upon arrival at their destination, illegals will find themselves nestled in prearranged housing, all at the expense of the American public." Dismay settled on Violet's face. It was common knowledge that these illegals, as the reporter phrased it, were granted free benefits, even surpassing those offered to America's elderly on Social Security. But Violet was unaware of the extent in which the federal government was involved. "Wow," Violet exclaimed, with frustration across her face. Clearly, the extent of involvement of the federal government, to facilitate an invasion at taxpayer expense, seemed incredibly irresponsible and unpatriotic. The reporter concluded with a pointed remark. "The individuals, referred to as gotaways, are a cause for significant concern. They've opted out of all the immediate free benefits offered by the federal government, so as to maintain their obscurity. Their likely nefarious past and future intentions raises the likelihood that the Alamo Center bombing might be the work of one such individual." Violet shook her head, frustrated by the senseless endangerment of innocent Americans, and the likelihood that the tragedy at the Alamo Center could have potentially been averted with a more secure border. The memory of her husband, their love and their future together, stolen by a terrorist attack in Afghanistan at Kabul Airport, intertwined with the recent grisly slaughter she witnessed at the Alamo Center, so similar, they made her heart cringe. Frustrated with the TV news broadcast, and getting hungry again, Violet turned off the TV. She had decided to leave and head for home. As she was heading out, she heard a familiar voice call out to her, "Hey, Violet." The captain was surprised to see her, and he quickly got up from his desk to catch her. He emerged from his office, his worn boots creaking softly on the tile floor. As he met Violet, he said, "I didn't realize you were still hanging around. You had a call, a fella named Davy Johnson, he wanted to speak with you." Recognition sparked in Violet's eyes, thinking he must be Dave's son, from the hospital. She asked, with apprehension in her voice, "What did he want?" Rocky's voice softened. He said that you transported his dad to the hospital last night, and that his dad passed away. He just said that he wanted to talk to you. Rocky handed Violet a slip of paper with Davy's phone number written on it, then added, he said that he would appreciate it if you would call him. At first hesitating, Violet took the slip of paper, and then looked over the phone number, pondering its potential. She could read the handwritten phone number just fine, thinking this could be an opportunity, an avenue of reaching out to Davy's family. On her mind was the promise she had made to his father. Rocky began gently, Violet, you're not obligated to call him back. It was a chaotic situation last night, you did your job, a lot of people were injured, and some, unfortunately, didn't make it. We all did our best, under immense pressure. Here at the department, we understand the emotional toll these situations can take. If you need it, we have resources available to help shield you, to help you deal with the emotional burden of the rescues you perform, as well as insulate you from any unwelcome future involvement with patients. Clutching the slip of paper, she paced and thought hard about what to do, but with Rocky watching, she had to decide quickly. The phone number was a path towards fulfilling her oath to Davy's father, and without the oversight of the fire department. She asked herself, what would John do? She quickly decided, and her mind was made up. With confidence, Violet said to the captain, thanks, Rocky, I got this. The captain added, if you call this fella back, be sure you don't provide any unofficial pieces of information. Only talk about information that has already been conveyed at the official press releases. Okay, I can handle that, she answered, and with a nod she headed out to her car. Twilight was settling in, while Violet sat in her car in the parking lot, pondering over what to do next. Violet gripped the steering wheel tight, her mind a tangled mess. The underlying theme of her next move was to attempt to fulfill the promise she had made to Davy's dad. To accomplish this goal, she would have to meet with Davy's family. How should she begin such a conversation with Davy? Although, Violet felt a profound sadness for Davy, she wondered, would her voice be a source of solace, or would it be a painful reminder of his loss? She couldn't predict the storm of emotions he might be facing. Should she tell him about the hug Davy's father gave her over the phone, or wait until she meets him in person? Finally, after waging a battle in her mind, of what to do, and how to do it, Violet had decided on a strategy, and reached for her phone. It was time to call Davy. Violet clutched the phone in her hand, while the fire station lights cast a soft glow on her determined face. After a deep breath, she punched in the numbers, each digit echoing in the quiet car. The silence stretched on, punctuated only by the frantic beat of her heart. Then, after what felt like an eternity, a voice answered through the phone. Hello, Davy Johnson here. The sound of his name sent a jolt through her, a mixture of trepidation and resolve settling in her gut. This was it, the moment of truth. Hi, this is Violet Wheeler, she said. I'm the EMT who took your dad to the hospital last night. We spoke briefly in the parking lot, your friend Mac was there too. Violet paused, but there was no response. She added, I'm the one who went inside to check on your dad. After another pause she continued again, then I came back out to tell you, about your father, that he had passed away. Still, there was only silence on the other end. Violet just listened, waiting for a response. Davy finally answered, I'm sorry, hearing from you again is more startling than I was expecting. Violet was trying to maintain her composure, and speak with a professional tone and demeanor, but her eyes began to tear. Trying to keep the conversation going, she replied, I could tell that your friend Mac cares a lot about you and your dad. Davy answered, yes, he does, he is my dad's best friend. They've known each other since high school. Mac is like part of our family. Violet, sensing a lack of hostility in Davy, hesitantly inquired, I don't know much about your family life. Your dad mentioned he was married and had children. Her voice trailed off, hoping a question might nudge him to open up. Davy was quick to reply, the family's pretty big actually. There's Mom, of course, and my two sisters, Mary and Jennifer. Plus, Dad's got 5 grandkids, 3 of them being mine. That's wonderful, Violet said, genuinely happy for Davy's large family. A house full of grandkids must be so fulfilling. By the way, what's your mom's name? Davy replied, my mom's name is Julie, Then he added, "She has always been a great mom, and she's a terrific grandma." Violet inquired further, "Speaking of your dad," Violet began cautiously, thinking that Davy might be sensitive talking about his dad. "What name did he like to go by, David or Dave?" Another silence fell upon Davy. Talking specifically about his dad seemed to be sensitive. It wasn't just a name anymore, to Davy, it felt like a unique mark his father left on the world, and talking about his father in the past tense was something new and difficult. After a thoughtful pause, Davy finally spoke. "People who knew him called him Dave." After another short pause, he softly said, "I called him Dad, of course, the grandkids, well, they knew him as Poppy or Grandpa." "Violet," Davy began with a somber voice, "Mac told me that you told him at the hospital, my dad gave you something to give to me. Is that true?" A wave of memories washed over Violet. The flashing lights, the sharp turns of the ambulance, the fading strength of a man desperate to connect with his family, one last time. Violet struggled to keep it together, knowing that the only thing on Dave's mind, as he was slipping away, was his family. Clearly the most important thing in his life. Swallowing hard, she forced her voice to remain steady. "Yes, Davy," she managed to say. "Your dad entrusted me with something very special, something he wanted you to have. I promised him I'd give it to you in person." After another silent pause, Davy came back with, "Would you be free to meet tonight?" Violet's mind swiftly weighed her options, trying to think of a good place to meet. Meeting at the fire station, or at her home wouldn't work. Thinking that Davy might be at or near his dad's house, she replied, "Actually, I'm just leaving work now. How about we meet at a neutral location, perhaps somewhere on the south side of Canyon Creek?" Davy came back with, "We could meet in the courtyard at my church, King Street Christian Center. It's on the south side of Canyon Creek." "Perfect," Violet said with a firm voice. "I can be there in 35 minutes, 45 minutes tops." Davy replied with directions, "The church has two main buildings, and there's a really nice open courtyard, right in between them. Just park out front, and it's a short walk into the courtyard to find me. I'll text you the exact address in a second." Tension was mounting, as Violet pulled out of the fire station parking lot. This evening, she would be facing the daunting task of fulfilling a promise made to a dying man, delivering, and passing on, his last hug, a final symbolic gesture of love to his grieving family. The outcome of this unconventional act remained shrouded in uncertainty. Will her gesture be embraced? Will it be met with confusion, or will it be denied altogether? In less than an hour, Violet will have her answer. Gradually, as she tightened her grip on the steering wheel while traveling north, Violet's stress was mounting. Eventually, taking in a deep breath, she realized she had to relax. The highway stretched out before her, a blur of asphalt and passing scenery. But her mind was far from the road. She was consumed by the looming task at hand, delivering the hug entrusted to her by Davy's father. A whirlwind of questions swirled in Violet's mind. How would she even begin to describe the frantic ambulance ride? Should she delve into the graphic details of his father's injuries? The image of his face, frantic and tense with smears of blood, flashed in her memory, a stark contrast to the vibrant man that Davy knew. Should she mention the terrifying heartbeat alarm? A warning that loudly blared as his father went into cardiac arrest just as they arrived at the hospital. The simple act of a hug, a gesture usually so spontaneous and natural, was now fraught with uncertainty. Should she be standing or sitting? What would seem more appropriate? And the most frightening question of all, what if he rejected it? The hug, intended to convey love and commitment to his family, could be met with a cold shoulder, a wall of grief, pushing her away. There was no manual for this, no script to follow. Where should the line be drawn? How much detail was too much, and a possible cruel intrusion on Davy's grief? What words could possibly offer comfort, as opposed to harsh facts? Should she even try to articulate the emotions Dave had tried to express, or let the embrace speak for itself? The longer she pondered, the more her anxiety gnawed at her. Each passing mile felt like an eternity, the worry of these unspoken words growing with every tick of the clock. Violet began to question this mission she was on, saying to herself, "This is crazy, what am I doing?" Then she thought about Dave's heartfelt plea, and the panic that was in his voice. This last hug was extremely important to him. She recalled his desperation to somehow reach out to his family one more time. This hug was between Dave and his family, and just by chance, she was the only one that could possibly convey this hug. At that moment, Violet realized there was no easy answer, no perfect approach. All she could do was to walk in with open arms and an open heart, hoping that somehow it would be enough. Finally, Violet pulled into the church parking lot, the scene mirroring Davy's description. A dozen cars or so were already parked, hinting at some ongoing evening event within the church. Violet parked strategically near the courtyard entrance, taking a deep steadying breath before whispering, "Here we go." Stepping out of the car, she was greeted by an atmosphere far different from the commercial hospital setting. Soft lighting bathed the courtyard, casting a dreamlike glow on the meticulously maintained landscape. Mature plants, a vibrant orchestra of textures and colors, lined the walkways paved with decorative brick pavers. In the center stood a pavilion, its intricate details partially veiled by a curtain of climbing vines. It was a picture of tranquility, a testament to the care and dedication that went into its upkeep. The courtyard was an unmistakable contrast to the emotions swirling within Violet. The peaceful scene offered a moment of unexpected comfort as she prepared to face the sensitive nature of her promise. As Violet approached the pavilion, a lone figure emerged from beneath the intricate latticework, casting a shadow on the cobblestone path. It was Davy, his face fatigued, with a combination of grief and trepidation that mirrored her own anxieties. Beside him, barely visible in the gentle twilight, sat a woman. Violet's steps faltered for a moment, while she braced herself, and then she continued forward. As she drew closer, the woman stood, revealing a kind but stressed face. It was Mary, Davy's sister. A small smile flickered across Mary's lips as their eyes met. Violet offered a hand in greeting. "Hi, I'm Violet," she said, out of uniform, of course. The informality, a deliberate attempt to ease the tension of the meetup. Davy's acknowledgement was a nod, his voice raspy and strained when he introduced his sister. "Violet, this is Mary, my sister." Their handshake was brief, a silent exchange of understanding passing between them. Without mentioning it, Mary noticed that Violet wore a wedding ring. Violet was pleased that two of Dave's children had come. Meeting two family members at once presented an unexpected opportunity, a chance to potentially double the impact of her visit. With a gesture toward the vacant bench, Violet invited them to sit. The curved design offered a semblance of intimacy. Violet settled next to Davy, their shoulders brushing ever so slightly. Mary took the seat on Davy's opposite side, her view able to glance between Violet and her brother. Their greetings were polite, courteous even, but devoid of warmth. Smiles were absent, replaced by a shared seriousness that underscored the gravity of the situation. It was a meeting tinged with sadness and regret, their shared tragedy pressing down on them, in spite of the tranquil and lovely atmosphere of the courtyard. Violet had formulated a plan during the drive, a carefully constructed narrative meant to unfold chronologically. After taking a deep breath, she began, "On the way here tonight, I realized it was important to provide some context about my involvement with your father last night." Davy and Mary leaned forward. Their faces expressed a mixture of curiosity and apprehension. Mary, her voice barely a whisper, prompted Violet to continue. "My partner and I were the first emergency responders at the stadium last night," Violet gently explained. "We quickly assessed the situation and determined your father needed immediate medical attention. He was chosen for the first transport to the hospital." She opted to omit graphic details unless specifically asked, allowing them to absorb the information at their own pace. Violet continued with a steady voice, "He was unconscious at first, but regained awareness as I prepared him for transport. I introduced myself as Violet, and instructed him to stay still, assuring him we'd get him to the hospital as quickly as possible." While Violet was speaking, Mary had reached out and offered Davy a silent gesture of comfort, tenderly holding onto his arm. Mary's eyes welled up, a silent battle raging within her, as she attempted to maintain her self-control. Davy broke his silence when Violet paused. He asked, "How badly injured was he? How could you tell?" Mindful of her words, Violet chose a measured response. "As an EMT, were trained to recognize certain types of injuries, she explained. He had suffered significant damage to his legs, and there were signs of considerable blood loss, but he was starting to come around. We were hopeful. Violet pressed on, her voice thickening with emotion. On the way to the hospital, I got him set up on an IV and a heart monitor. He remembered my name, and we even managed a short conversation. Her eyes glanced between Davy and Mary, a silent plea for understanding. But then, as Violet's words trailed off mid-sentence, a tremor ran through Violet's body. Her words became a reflection of the events from just the night before, and she was reliving her experience again. Violet paused to regain her composure, and brushed away her tears. Then after collecting herself, she continued. Your dad, he started shaking, struggling to stay conscious. The fear in his eyes. Violet's voice caught again for a moment. And then she continued again. He said he thought he was dying, somehow, he said he could sense it. A choked sob escaped Mary's lips, tears glistening on her cheeks. Davy mirrored her reaction, his face crumpling in silent grief. The anguish from the past night overtook all three of them, causing an emotional disruption within the tranquility of the courtyard. Eventually, after taking a shaky deep breath, Violet continued her story. Your dad reached out, both arms outstretched. He wanted a hug, his last hug, he called it. He wanted me to find you, to pass it on. It was immensely important to him. So I said okay, and then we hugged. Violet's voice dropped and she spoke the next part softly. He was frantic and struggling. He didn't want to let me go until I promised to deliver this hug to you, to your whole family. I promised him I would. That's why I'm here tonight. To deliver to you, your father's last hug. Violet sadly looked down, then she continued speaking softly. Moments later, his arms lost their grip, and he went into cardiac arrest, just as we pulled into the hospital. Violet was struggling, wiping away more tears from her eyes. Mary and Davy, they clung to each other tightly, racked with sobs and heartache. This encounter was far more profound, and far more emotionally charged than either of them could have anticipated. They'd expected an object, perhaps a memento, not something so deeply personal. Violet held an invisible treasure, something far more precious than any material possession. With tear-filled eyes, Violet reached out to Davy, her arms open in a silent invitation. Davy hesitated, his gaze darting to Mary. A silent conversation passed between them, a shared understanding reflected in their eyes. Mary released him gently, with a silent nod of encouragement. He was desperate for anything at all. Something that could connect him to his father again. Davy leaned forward and wrapped his arms tightly around Violet. As they embraced, Violet leaned in and whispered into his ear, "Be the Max." The words were a complete surprise, and a perfect encapsulation of their father, a secret phrase that only family and those close to Dave would understand. This wasn't just a hug, it was a tangible bridge between past and present, a final act of love, from a father to his child. Davy gushed with emotion out loud. With his voice half crying and sobbing, he said, "Thank you, Dad. I miss you so much." Davy sensed that this hug was something extraordinary. It wasn't just a physical touch, it was an actual connection. It was soothing and energized in some way, as if he were actually hugging his dad, one last time. Half crying, he couldn't help but open up. "Thank you for everything. I love you so much. You have always been my hero. Everyone needs a hero, and you were mine." Mary had witnessed the entire exchange. The authenticity of the hug, the shared secret whispered by Violet, left no doubt in her mind. This was real. Tears streamed down her face as Violet and Davy separated. As Davy sat quietly, overcome with emotion, Violet wiped away her own tears, then stood up. She moved towards Mary and sat next to her, her eyes mirroring the silent question Davy had asked moments before. "Are you ready for this, Mary?" they seemed to say. Offering a gentle smile, Violet extended her arms once more. Tears welled up even faster in Mary's eyes, as Violet's arms opened, an invitation for a hug. Relief, tinged with a bittersweet sorrow, washed over Mary. This hug, this powerful expression of her father's love, was more precious than anything she could have imagined. There was no hesitation. Mary knew she craved this connection, this final embrace from her dad. As they came together, a crying sob escaped Mary's lips, the dam holding back her emotions finally broke, tears streamed down her face, and her voice cried out loud. "Oh my goodness." Violet held her tight, acting as her silent pillar of strength. In a voice barely a whisper, Violet spoke the special phrase, the one that confirmed the authenticity of this gift. "Be the Max." Mary clung to Violet, speaking to her father one last time, the words echoing from her heart. "Daddy," she cried out, her voice piercing with grief, "oh Daddy! You are the most wonderful dad I could have ever asked for." Like with Davy, she sensed that this hug wasn't just an embrace from a stranger, but an actual bridge to her father, and they were together again, one last time. "I love you so much," she said, over and over. In that moment, the years melted away. She was a little girl again, safe in her father's arms, and the simple, heartfelt gesture of his hug brought a wave of fresh tears. It was a final goodbye, a promise, and a testament to a love that transcended even death. Davy, sensing his sister's grief, reached out and placed a comforting hand on Mary's shoulder. As Mary's sobs subsided, Davy softly spoke to Violet, "Dad always told us, be the Max. It was his way of saying we should live life to the fullest, always striving to be our best selves." Violet, touched by the sentiment, replied, "That's a beautiful philosophy. I'll hold on to those words." With a gentle squeeze of Mary's hand, Violet excused herself, saying, "I'll be back in a few minutes." Knowing they needed space, Violet wandered the courtyard. Its serenity soothed her own churning emotions. Meanwhile, Mary and Davy shared a private moment, one that only a brother and sister could comprehend. When Violet returned to the pavilion, a quiet understanding had settled between Davy and Mary. Violet softly asked, "Ready to head home?" Davy, with his voice still thick with emotion, replied, "Thank you for coming tonight. It meant the world to both of us. Knowing Dad was thinking of us in his final moments, it brings a special kind of comfort." Mary added, her voice low and subdued, "I know we'll see him again someday. But tonight. Tonight it felt like he was here with us." Davy continued, "I know that my mom and other sister, Jennifer, would love to meet you. We'll tell them about you and the promise you made to Dad." Violet replied, "I'd like to meet them too. Does Jennifer live nearby?" Davy answered, "No, but she'll be here tomorrow morning, from Germany." Violet's eyes widened. She asked, "Germany? Is she stationed at Ramstein Air Base by any chance?" A glimmer of surprise crossed Davy's face. "Yes, she's living in Germany for a while. She's an air traffic controller in the Air Force." "Amazing," Violet exclaimed. "I was stationed there too. Perhaps we have something in common." With a handshake that spoke volumes, they said their goodbyes. Though the evening had been filled with heartache, it ended well, and Violet had begun to fulfill her promise. Looking ahead, she felt newfound resolve. It might take time, but she was determined to be a tower of strength for Dave's family. Perhaps she could help them find their own strength, their own resilience to get them through their sadness. There, amidst the grief, bloomed a seed of hope. A family's connection forged in shared loss was finding their way forward, together. An hour later, the apartment door clicked shut behind Violet. The silence welcomed, after the day's several emotional roller coaster rides. She sank onto the couch, the remote triggering the TV to life. She was looking for the latest news of the bombing. The local news channels continued to blare a relentless loop of the tragedy that had shattered her city. Suddenly, a TV news alert flashed onto the screen. A remote field reporter, his face serious but excited with something new to report, took center stage. "Breaking news," he announced. "Police have identified and located the vehicle used to transport the bomber to the Alamo Center." The camera panned to a nondescript gray SUV, and Violet immediately recognized the vehicle. "That's it," Violet yelled out. It was definitely the vehicle that dropped off the bomber. Just the sight of the car made her angry. "This vehicle," continued the reporter, his voice amplified as Violet raised the volume on the TV, "was found abandoned 250 miles northwest of San Antonio, near I-10. The driver, identified as Carlos Mendoza, remains at large." The screen changed, showing again the now familiar forensic image of Carlos. The phantom face stared back at Violet, igniting a fury within her. After spending time with Dave's family, seeing his face again served as a reminder of the horrific acts he had committed and amplified the disgust she had for this man. The cold-blooded nature of his crimes filled Violet with a burning desire for vengeance. She longed to inflict her own brand of justice upon this villain, to make him pay for his atrocities. The reporter added, "Authorities believe Carlos Mendoza fled west last night, possibly crossing state lines. If you see this man, do not approach him. He is considered armed and dangerous. Instead, contact your local police immediately." A white-hot fury ignited within Violet. This sadistic man had unleashed a torrent of pain and suffering, and she, more than most, understood the devastation he'd left in his wake. Since the attack, she has lived with a constant sting of devastating loss, a searing reminder of the lives shattered by his actions. But beneath it all, a primal urge for justice simmered. Violet understood the Texan's desire for vengeance, the need to take matters into their own hands, validated by the reporter asking Texans to just call the authorities. Exhaustion was finally taking its toll, and quickly crashed over Violet. Tomorrow would bring a new sunrise, and with it, the need to return to some semblance of normalcy, and another day at work. There was some comfort knowing that Carlos Mendoza probably was no longer in the San Antonio area, and she knew the FBI and police were hot on his trail. Finally, lying in bed, and still wearing her husband's necklace, she caressed it, gave it a kiss, and then proudly went to sleep. She would sleep well tonight.